to Fusion International Film Festival's The Podcast. I'm Stephen Mina, and this is episode 11. Steve Grossmith's guest today is Vijay Kumar Michandani, a New York-based filmmaker who originated from the city of Bombay, home of course to Bollywood. Vijay began his career as a sports director. This is where he found the experience that would lead him into production. And as you will hear, this was only the beginning of his ongoing adventure. Let's join Steve and Vijay as they discuss the journey.
Vijay, we had some contact with you a few weeks ago from Dan. You and I then chatted. You were really kind enough to resend me two of your films, Love Can't Be Locked Down and When in Rome. I've seen both of the films. I love both of the films. I know you're going to enter them into our festival. It's both shorts. I'm sure you love my T-shirt, by the way. You're probably looking at my T-shirt. And for those who can't see, I'm wearing a Mandalorian T-shirt. Yeah, just tell me your journey from how you arrived to work to being a filmmaker in the US.
Well, thanks, Steve, for having me. I would really say it's a great journey, and it's been a long journey, I would say. That's what I can start from. So originally, I was born in Bombay, India, and so-called glamorously known as Bollywood. So I would not take that away from me. Being living in that city and the credentials of being a Bombay boy is always going to carry forward. So by default, where I was living in the city in Bombay, when the suburbs was called Bandra, which is a very popular suburb for the Bollywood stars and the filmmaking industry as per se, because it's pretty affluent area. So you had all those stars trying to choose to live in that kind of particular, you know, place in the locality. My friends around me were somewhere or the other connected to the industry, as their parents were either a filmmaker or producers, or then they turned out to become directors, actors, and, you know, whatever. So it was just kind of, while growing up with them, I also kind of grew up in learning how the filmmaking business was, attending their parties, connected to the glamour somewhere or the other. I never thought that I would get into that industry. So as a typical South Asian family, the parents pressure that you have to be an engineer, doctor or something. Yeah. So staple diet, I was also an engineer by profession, which I was good in studies. So of course that took that path. But I always had these friends around me who used to do that kind of work. So at the back of my mind, this was always there, that, you know, creativity was there. I used to take part in some kind of ad shoots. I used to model for a bit. I used to do some runway walks. So I was there some way or the other, but never in a hardcore professional way.
You're a good-looking guy, Vijay, so it doesn't surprise me.
Thank you. So that kind of just took the toll of trying to experiment. And then while I was doing some ad shoots with a friend of mine, I asked him that, you know, when you do these ad shoots, I would like to see how you edit it. What happens after the behind the scenes, you know? So he kind of took me to the editing studio. And as I walked in, the moment the door of the editing studio opened with all those glamorous machines and the monitors and the screens and that, I said, wow, this is like a cockpit, you know? You could see like it's entering into a different world. And I was totally mesmerized. And I said, wow, you know what? This has always been my dream. And I think this is where I belong. And that was the turning point to get into the process of production. So obviously, I went through all those regular steps of becoming an associate producer and getting up the ranks, learning the business, and it just took off from that side. So my engineering just took a backseat. I quit the engineering industry after a year working in it, and then I got completely into the filmmaking business. But it all started with advertising, slowly taking the steps into television, because television had not still launched in a big way in India. They only had one broadcast channel, Doordarshan. And in 1995, when the cable satellite television started getting into the country with Zee Television, Sony Television, then there was more programming, more content, and more requirement for staff and crew. So that's where I started getting into production. And I just led myself to become one of those most sought-after creative directors in sports, because I chose my niche to be a sports director. So I was doing live sporting events, covering live events like golf and, you know, athletics and squash. So I was trying to find myself, and I found myself as a sports director. So I moved from Bombay to Delhi working in some way for Doordarshan as a sports executive in terms of production. So that kind of gave me a very good technical background, because being an engineer, I already had a very strong technical foothold. The technical words, the jargons, the frequencies, all that was there in me anyway. So the creativity and that production part helped me to become a good, strong filmmaker. Slowly, one after the other, moved different countries for different jobs and the different networks. I was working in the Middle East for Arab radio and television. There, I was leading a cricket channel. I was also doing sports and promotions for Manchester United. In fact, I shot with David Beckham as well for a commercial. I've done some crazy stuff. I was doing heading the promotions for Granada Television in London. So I used to come to London quite often to work with them. And from that was the entertainment and news and that kind of genre that took me to move from Italy and Dubai, where I was based out, to the Middle East, back to Dubai. And that's how I was heading the marketing and creative division of Arab Radio and Television. There's an Asian network.
I've been to Dubai a couple of times and I love it. But what's it like to actually work there? Was it a good environment?
It's a very good environment. I moved to Dubai the first time in 2000, almost 20 years ago. So that was a complete different story. It was developing in a different way. It was still getting those, Dubai Media City was just being created. So a lot of things was happening. Today, it's a completely different animal. After 20 years, the whole country has changed completely. But we were doing good. We was based out of Dubai Media City. We had the Jebel Ali was still getting developed. So Star Television was there. So Showtime was there. Orbit had not even done a lot of work over there. You know, so all these networks were there. But brilliant place, very, very cosmopolitan, extremely all kinds of communities and, you know, immigrants over there. So I think it was a brilliant time. I had a great time. I used to enjoy living in Dubai and working from there. I was just bang opposite the Dubai Media City in those beautiful landscape villas go down to Hard Rock Cafe and, you know, take our meetings over there. So it was great. It was a great trip out there. So Dubai happened. And then after Dubai, I got married. So I moved to Malaysia. And Malaysia is where my wife was from. So I thought maybe I'll settle down there in Malaysia and, you know, go to the Far East and still be good, because Al Jazeera had just opened a wing in Kuala Lumpur as the East center, as a news bureau in Kuala Lumpur. So I was living in Kuala Lumpur. I thought that would be a good break to work with Al Jazeera. But Al Jazeera had just a small setup. So they kind of thought I was overqualified for that division. So they kind of pushed my resume to the headquarters to Doha. And Doha was in 2006 was launching a documentary channel. So they invited me to work for the documentary channel since it was launching. And I had an expertise in launching channels and marketing and promotions. So again, I flew back from the Middle East, back to the Middle East. So Middle East, Dubai to Malaysia, 6-8 months, and again back to Qatar. So that was the turning point of me getting exposed to documentaries in 2006. All this while was all commercial, all networks, all entertainment and sports. But Al Jazeera documentary showed me that I could do a long form storytelling also. And in 2007, I made a short documentary for Al Jazeera on autistic children. That led me to understand that I was very good with storytelling on social stories and subjects of that matter. And so I just found myself into a different box altogether that sports had done. Now I'm finding myself in documentaries. And I chose to stick by that genre. And after that, I've been only doing social impact films and documentaries based on those kind of subjects. So from Qatar, I moved to Australia. I did my feature documentary in Australia on homelessness, and that did pretty well. It was called Where the Streets Have No Name. It did 33 festivals and I won 14 awards for that film. So that clearly kind of gave me a pat on my back saying that, yes, you've chosen the right genre. I think you are good in this, so continue. And that's where I kept continuing. And now from Australia, I moved to China for 2 years. I was in Shanghai as well. I was working on a documentary on organic food. But then while I was finishing the shoot, I got a call from the United States saying that there's an opening over here for a news network which needs a promotions and marketing head, because I was very good in promotions and marketing. So I could not refuse the offer of the United States. And I moved here 8 years ago to United States. And I was in Washington, D.C. first, working for this nonprofit U.S. channel, which is an Arabic news network. Yeah. So I did 5 years with them in Washington, D.C. And then kind of things changed. And I was not able to get back to filmmaking, because when you're working in big networks, you're so engrossed with
the time.
And documentary filmmaking takes time. Your research, working, shooting, it does take time. So I think for 5 years, 5.5 years, I was in that bubble of not being able to do what I really passionately like. But then I got a chance to move out from D.C. In 2018, I moved to the east, further east towards New Jersey. So I live in New Jersey, technically speaking, just across the Hudson River. So New York is just, I can see it right from my backyard, I would say. I live in New Jersey, and that's 2018. I went full-time into filmmaking back. I said, you know, let me go back to what I really enjoy. So 2018, I've been working on a documentary on domestic violence and sexual abuse. So that's still under post-production. While that production was happening and post, I featured into doing a couple of short films with some filmmakers. So I did one on the Women's March, called Habaneros. It was in 2018 mid. Then I did another short film on a true story called The Process, which was a little bit of a thriller action. That was again 2018. And then just recently, 2020, starting off, I did with When in Rome. So that was on LGBT kind of a background.
Because it's a really well shot short film. And thing is, Vijay, I've seen thousands of short films from filmmakers over the last 5 or 6 years. And you know when a film has been well made and you can see where the production is there. And you can see with yours, it's a really well-produced film. It's a really good film, I have to say. In my head, I'm thinking, oh, yeah, all that experience you can see has been drawn into what he's doing now. So you're obviously quite accomplished. It's a really well-made film. And Love Can't Be Locked Down, as I say, I know we can talk about it, but that's a COVID-themed film, isn't it? I think it's best to say.
So like I said, I always worked on stories that were that had something special into it. Just by doing a normal short film, because as you said, there are thousands of filmmakers and thousands of films being made every day. So how do you stand out? You got to have something that you passionately like to do on a particular genre. So I always wanted to work on social films or films that were giving a message. So when I did the short film also, I was doing it with directors who had a story on some message, like Women's March. There was an agenda about it. So the story is just not making about something, but there's a point. You want to make a point. You want to tell something about it, not only in documentaries. Yeah. So some people think that just short films are just meant to be doing an experiment or getting your hands dirty. No, even that can be done with a message. So I just kind of use the opportunity and I work with filmmakers only that I'm able to send that message across. So even Process was a very sleekly done film, very small film, 8-minute film. But the director had a point of saying how certain thing happens. It's very suspenseful thriller action. It was shot on red. It did pretty well. But then what happens, I realized that despite being a very good film, despite being shot so beautifully, it did not get that much of traction as the women's empowerment film got or as When in Rome is getting or as Love Can Be Longer, because they have all three got a stronger social message compared to The Process, which was a good film, but not a social message. So that clearly gave me the idea that I was having a better understanding of what I'm doing. So that's where it is, yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think with both those films, I don't want to say they're the zeitgeist of the moment. Things like the Black Lives Matters and further empowerment of women, which is really important. And thankfully, those issues are becoming much more to the fore. I think what you've tapped into is part of a really growing trend. In a really, really positive way, because these things need to be highlighted. Of course, these things need to be shown. And I just think that, I mean, look, we're all for seeing more films that tackle these kind of subject matter. And why wouldn't we? You know, why shouldn't we? You know, it's really, really important. Can I ask, with When in Rome, because let's be honest about it, it could be When in London or When in Paris. But why in particular did you make it a Rome? Is there a story behind that, the reason you made it an Italian short or Italian-themed short?
Yeah, there's definitely a story behind it. So what the story is that the film is from that location because the director is Italian. He lives over there in Rome. And he always wanted to make a film from that part of it. So I was not there in the process of the filmmaking right in the beginning. It was already being conceived. Luca had already done the whole thing that he had to do. The film was almost shot as well, I would say. They had done the conception, the idea. They had picked up the location because Luca is a very artistic person, very creative. He exactly knew what he wanted. And in the film, there is a story about the truth, which is a part of his real life. There is something which was very real that he wanted to do in his life. And he used that in the film itself. So there's a secret that you talk about in the film. There's a little secret that you have to tell. Yeah, and he wanted to say that to his father himself, that he would do it and it would get accepted sometime. It did. It did not get accepted. I would not say that, but that was what the idea was. And then he made that film to say his own story. So being in Italy, being an Italian language, everything was supposed to be over there. But he particularly wanted to show a small town, quaint town, which is beautiful, which explains the story that how in a small town, what exists, what is the underlying layers behind it.
But
the location, Sutri, in particular, because he is a fan following of, you know, he had told me, Shannon Singh, that there was this master, Federico Fellini, who had shot some beautiful frames in La Dolce Vita in that film. So he said, I want to capture the same kind of essence. And it was a deliberate move to shoot it over there. And everything was done fantastically. The cinematographer, Giuseppe Mottola, a great friend of mine as well, he's the one who introduced. So they did the film somewhere around, I think, the summer of 2019. in August, because you can see it's quite sun. It's the shots have got beautiful sunlight, and also it has to be in the summer sequence that was done. And they approached me much later after that, saying that, Vijay, would you be a part of it because of your experience to take the film to the next level? And that's where I joined forces. I said, you know what? I love the story. I love the climax, of course. And I love the beautiful taking of it and how you've done. And I used to live in Italy for so many years. So that passion connected to that. I wanted to make a film in Italy sometime in my life. And this just fell into my lap. I speak Italian very fluently. I was staying next to Rome. The film was shot next to Rome. And all these guys are Italian. And I said, you know what? It's come to me after so many years. I'm going to do it blindly. And that's where I said, you know what? This is my film. I love the idea. It's got LGBTQ inside it. I work on those things. There's every dot is being connected so beautifully, and I cannot say no. And for Luca himself, he has got great credentials. He is a fantastic director of commercials. But having said, not many people know, he was currently scheduled to work on the Mission Impossible brand.
Right, wow.
So he is a very technical, brilliant director. That is why you can see the quality of the film.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it shines through, and you can tell the quality from that one, particularly on that film. So, Vijay, who owns the Alfa Romeo that's used in the film? That's what I want to know.
I think it was rented.
It was rented. So now you said something very interesting a few minutes ago, which I picked up on, about the situation in India. And I think in the late 90s, how there was only one satellite station. Of course, it's exploded now. So beggars the question, you must consider going back to work there, because the world is your oyster, and what you've left behind has transformed entirely. I know you've got a great career in New York and America, but the situation in India must be phenomenal now. I speak to Indian filmmakers all the time, and it's exploded. So are you tempted to go back there and reroute or not?
Well, you know, like you said, television industry has, I would say, catapulted to a different level altogether. When I chose to leave my profession of an engineer to go and do filmmaking or television, my mother told me, get out of the house. I was literally the disruptor. Literally the disruptor in 1994. There was nothing called TV, because there was no TV. So when people talk about disruption today, I say I was the early disruptor who left engineering into television filmmaking. Was a completely different ballgame. But today, you have this as a high-end profession. The amount of universities who are teaching filmmaking in India today is crazy, because they understand that they have evolved. And that's great, because not only has the old concept, the digital revolution has evolved, there's so many ways of the expansion of the media. You could have, you know, graphics, you could have digital, you could have so many openings. So I think the landscape has given you more opportunity to work. I always wanted to do something back in India. In fact, after I was successful as a documentary filmmaker, you'll be surprised, 2012 or something, I went back to India for a reunion with the school friends, you know. And I mentioned to one of my friends, who is a very good producer, he is a distributor of films. I told him, you know what, India is growing, evolving. India has not touched documentaries in such a way as it can touch Bollywood films.
That's right.
I'm coming with all the knowledge. I would want to start a documentary channel dedicated in this country. And there are so many films. I don't need to get content from anywhere else. You can create your own content made in India as you do. There are so many aspiring filmmakers. There are so many institutes. There are so many people. Not everybody makes a Bollywood film. You can't reach that status right away. Put this platform. Let people make short films and documentaries. And you know what the answer was? To me, Vijay, Bollywood is only Bollywood. Nobody's going to watch your shorts and documentaries. It's a useless proposition.
Really?
Guess what? Now they have dedicated documentary channel. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
This is what I was talking about, disruption. I've been so visionary in telling them earlier. They did not. But nevertheless, it's not too late. They are still evolving. Because you see short films coming from India in festivals worldwide. And you see so many films have been awarded because of the films they make. So India is not far back in content. You can imagine 1.3 billion people, even if you take 1% of that population is into filmmaking, that's a huge number of creativity. There's a huge number of stories coming out of it. So I don't think that people should limit themselves only to make Bollywood films. There should be more of that. So coming back to your question, I definitely have some projects in mind. Currently, I have a documentary which I'm working crossover between US and India. I will not say no. So that's in production. But I would make an independent film, a fiction film with India and US as a crossover. I will not just do India, but I will do a crossover between both the countries. But moving back to India and staying there, that could be a little difficult. I will not be based over there permanently, but back and forth, because I have a very strong foothold with the creativity, with the people, with the cast. All my friends today have grown bigger in the industry that we started from. So staying 25 years, they have their own reputation and name and their own market value. So I would not say that that would not be of great value to me. That's going to be a lot of leverage that I will take from them while doing the project. So yeah. India is on the cards, yes.
Again, what I love about speaking to you, and we've only spoken once before, is your real enthusiasm and passion. I get that a lot from filmmakers, thankfully. It shouldn't be a surprise to me, because filmmakers, by their very nature, are passionate people, because they work in an art form, you know, a true art form. And I think it's always refreshing to see that commitment and that passion that spills over into their filmmaking. If you weren't, then you shouldn't really be a filmmaker, should you? Because you've got to reflect that in the work you do, right? And you've got to do the projects you want to do.
See, you're right. Like, for example, I don't say any industry, anybody who's working in any kind of industry is not passionate about that work. You look at creative people, you look at designers, look at scientists, look at engineers. Everybody has to have the passion for the job they are doing. But what happens is, sometimes because of the kind of technical job that they do, the passion and the creativity kind of takes a low end. It starts dipping down, because you start getting into the same 9-to-5 rigmarole, and you are working for somebody, you're working. So that kind of, even if you're creative, the level of that point is not taken to the height. It's kind of submissive. But filmmakers predominantly are storytellers. You have to be, when even if you go to school or your parents told you a story when you were a child, putting you to bed, even when they read the book for you, there was so much of passion and excitement in that storytelling. Because if you don't have the passion, the excitement, you cannot paint that picture. The audience or the person who's listening or watching it is not going to feel the emotion. So when you're putting emotions in the story, the passion just kind of comes out. If you're having like an interview, if you're being interviewed by somebody on a normal a TED talk or a regular political platform, the emotions are not going to come. The passion, yeah. It's going to be a very straight curve. That's a different level of discussion. When we talk about creativity to somebody, when somebody's pitching you something, we're talking about a film or about a creative moment of that film, it's going to come out with so much of passion that that person has actually given birth to that kind of a sequence. So filmmakers, no doubt, Steve, have to have that passion coming out. And if you find somebody who's less passionate, I don't know what to say that he's a good filmmaker.
Well, no, that's interesting, because let's say you're on a set somewhere, and as I say, you're very ebullient, you're very passionate, I can tell that. But you must come across people that are working on set, it must happen because this is life, right? That aren't as passionate as you, that aren't as driven. And don't you ever think, you know what, I'm here, I'm loving what I do, but how do I pull these people up and make them see the vision? Because you want people to be bang, 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 and to go with it, you know? But how do you infuse these people?
So it's, you're right, because sometimes, you know, you have these crew members who work on your sets. They are just doing their daily job. They are doing it like a gig. For them, it's like a, you know, grapher or like somebody who's putting up, changing the monitor, or who's just holding the boom mic. For them, it's just a job, because they are just earning their daily bread and going. But the point is, when you are, I brief them. My point is, I involve people passionately in the project before I sign them, asking them how they feel about the project.
Yeah,
because my films are socially messaged. They have the social impact film. There's a lot of intensity in the film. So people have to read the script to feel it. And they say, oh, wow, that's a great one. I think that. So everybody, every human being per se has got an agenda, has got a mission, has got a motto, has got whatever they like to do. If this falls in their mission, the passionate element comes into it automatically. So I talk to them and I give them the energy by saying that, you know what? And everything is very transparent. If you've got a tight deadline, we've got no budget, we are working against time, I tell them this is what the story is. If you have to do a 10-hour shift, we will have to do a 10-hour shift. Yeah. Yeah. We cannot break for 2 hours of lunch or 1 hour for lunch. We have sandwiches on the go. We can save time while we are transporting from location one to location two, yeah. Eat the sandwich in the car. So you are actually, it's like, you know, when you have a big company, you open it and to giving stocks to your to the general public, same way. I make them invested in the project as if they are the stock shareholders of the film. And that's the most important part. You just can't make them feel like the outsider and work on your film. You got to make them the insider, get a piece of the cake, and then the product comes out well. So I drive my projects only with passion. And I'm so far, I've been pretty lucky and fortunate that all the crew has really gone, not 100%, 200% in giving what they could. I'll give you a very good example. I made this documentary, Where the Streets Have No Name in Australia. It's a feature documentary of 75 minutes, 80 minutes. I shot the whole documentary in 7 days. 7 days back-to-back outdoor shooting. We were working from the morning at 8 o'clock till 12 o'clock in the night, coming back and then downloading all the content out from the drives because there was no way. In between, while we are shooting, our cards were filled. We used to have one car only take the SD cards back to the hotel and dump it down onto the hard drive and bring them. Because that's the only way you have to do it. Yeah. So you have got limited. So you got to work as, that's what production is all about. Not only as a director, as a production, you have to be a very strong producer to be able to maximize your time, your crew and the budget. And I think I have got both sides very well tuned in. I'm a fantastic producer. I'm a very cost-effective producer and I do my films very well. So I take that credit because it's not easy to be able to achieve that.
Brilliant. So if we may just finally talk about, because it's a very relevant subject matter, love can't be locked down. I know we've talked about COVID and what's happening and we've kind of covered it from terms of where we are in the world at the moment. But just tell me a little bit about the background and what this film is actually about and why you decided that you really wanted to make it right now.
I'll tell you something. There are very few instances in life that are going to be remembered for life. World War I, World War II, some plague, 9/11. All these incidents that happen in life which create a big shake in the world is always going to be remembered for life and that stories are going to be told over and over again. Corona virus or this pandemic was not is not a normal phenomena. It's a once in a lifetime phenomena. It's been 6 months down the road or 7 months and we are still dealing with it. So for me, I knew that subjects like these, people are going to be, not use the word exploit, but people are going to make big mega films out of it. Feature docs, feature stories, Hollywood films, Bollywood, everybody is going to capitalize on this story because it's a very rare phenomena.
Yeah.
So now if they are going to be maximizing this thing in fiction, it ought to be maximized in non-fiction or in a documentary for sure. So I was thinking about trying to make a document, but the lockdown was coming in. It was so difficult to be able to think of what to make and how to make, what to make and how to make. So I just kind of had it in the back burner thinking, maybe I'll do a story about it post it happens or what were the impact or effect of COVID to people, something like that. But then I had this director friend of mine with whom I had made the process. He called me and he said, you know, Vijay, I have this project. A friend of mine who is grounded because of the COVID, he's a great cinematographer and he's got an idea. He said, why don't we work on doing something in COVID? So we sat down together with my team and we've got this script and we are wanting to make a short film on COVID. So it just kind of, I was sitting there, I wanted to do something and I was not looking at a short film, but at least there was an object of a mission. So I said, send me the script. And he sent me the script and the script had got the umbrella and the landscape of COVID, but it was dealing with something else. The impact or the message in the film was something else. And the impact of the film was the amount of, I would say, negative impact that the Asian community was having because of the virus. It was being said so loud and clear by the people in power. It's called the Chinese virus. It's got this. So there are a lot of things happening and it was just creating that tension. Now, I'm an immigrant to this country. I might have not faced direct kind of impact of racism or you could say sideline marginalizing over here in this US, but I did face that some part in the Middle East. I did face some part in Australia because there were a lot of stories about Indians and Middle Eastern getting impacted in Australia because it happened. So this story, I felt like, you know, it's my personal story. It could have been me. So it could be anybody. So I said, you know what? Great idea. Let's make it, but we got to keep a balance between not making a propaganda, not making a big issue about we are trying to fight for a cause. We are not trying to fight for a cause. We are trying to address a point that it's incorrect. That's what we are trying to do in the film, but it's under the umbrella of the COVID because COVID is what is happening. But we are also going to show that the people who are blaming this kind of community is religiously following the norms and the requirements of the CDC or the government or whatever is required to be done. But why are you blaming them? So we just had to put a mix together and it worked well. So we do have everything that a COVID environment would need. as a responsible citizen. And we explain that part to the film that that is not to be marginalized. So it worked out very well, the script. But I told him, how do we shoot? Because New York was just about to get into a verdict on a particular day. It's going to be lockdown. So they don't use the word lockdown. It was supposed to be shelter in place. That's the technical word that was supposed to be happening. And that date was 21st of March midnight. From 22nd morning, midnight, it was going to change and everybody had to stop coming out. It was going to be a complete different story. So I told him, if the film has to be done, it has to be done in location in Times Square, where the epidemic is there, where the epicenter of the problem is there. You just can't shoot this film feeling about it in your house. It's not going to work. Like, you know, some things have to be felt real, and the only reality will come when you're on the location in Times Square. So we had to make the climax in Times Square. Now, crew is running 1 week before we can shoot, and the numbers are increasing. Star cast is getting scared because the numbers are increasing. Social distancing rules are coming up more often. How can you do? You cannot do more than six people. All the pressure mounting up, but we have to shoot it before the 21st of midnight, because then you cannot do that. So I went to Times Square 2 days before the shoot date. I said, we have to shoot on 21st because that's the last day. We cannot do anything before that because we are still prepping. On the 19th of March, I went to Times Square. They have a police booth over there because I've shot a lot of things on Times Square. So I went and spoke to them, asking them, what is my technical requirement if I have to shoot something over here? Like, I wanted to be sure that I don't, because I take a crew and I have the star cast, and then suddenly I get, you can't shoot, you can't work like that. So I spoke to them. There was no legal permissions as such required because we are a very small crew. We are shooting on a film camera, a small 16mm, 8mm, so it's not going to block anybody. But we had to maintain that precautions of responsible being social distancing, wearing a mask, wearing gloves, all that had to be kept into place because we could not create a film and not follow what the principles are. You cannot preach without practicing it. You know what I'm saying? We had to do that to be able to do whatever we required to do. And they said, fine, you can come, try maximum, but it's going to be by 10 o'clock, we're going to start, you know, getting people out of the Times Square because midnight is going to be the, not curfew, but shelter in place. So I came back to the team. I said, hey guys, we got to do this. This is our time. And that's what it is. The crew started going out because it was nearing the date of the the crisis was increasing. We couldn't get the right star cast because the star cast was backing out. So I told my director, whatever happens, we'll make the film. If I have to act, I will act in it. Because we have to make the film. Everything has already been planned. We cannot walk out now. So we will go with it. Lucky enough, we got the crew. We got the star cast. We managed to shoot the film. We were in the climax of Times Square and we get stalled by the cops. Even though I had asked, requested, but they said, you can do this. It was around 8:30 in the evening. And by 10 o'clock, I could see all the cars were supposed to come in. All the police cars were supposed to come in. So we had that window. I requested them, give me half an hour. They said, you have got 10 minutes. Shoot what you want to shoot and get out from this place. At 8:30, we are shooting a climax. And the climax is the most important sequence of the film. Lucky enough, I told my crew, I said, don't stop. Just keep rolling and I'll try to do something what I can do. So I went to the cops again. I spoke to them. I was trying to explain to them, this is what we are doing. I said, till the time I keep talking and kind of keeping them occupied, you all keep shooting whatever you can shoot. You have to do guerrilla kind of shoot over here right now. We spent an hour and we got what we could get. By 10 o'clock, we were all done. So I managed to squeeze another hour from that location just by talking to those cops and explain to them that what we are doing and the objective of the film. So we were maintaining everything, but they didn't want to have other people, you know, when there's a camera, when there's a star cast working, you have the crowd that starts stopping and looking at you. They didn't want that to happen. But no. Even how much ever you try, you have a little bit of a light, you have a little bit of a camera, you have a bit of action going on, you have a boom mic moving, people know you're shooting something. And then even two or three of people start crowding. They didn't want that because they wanted social distancing. So I don't blame them. They were doing the job perfectly well, but we had to do our job as well. So it just happened good for both parties. They were happy we didn't mess it up. We were happy we could finish it off. So that's what COVID story had to come in some way. And I was lucky I made it. Love Can Be Lockdown today has already been selected in two film festivals. So we're very happy that our effort, we took the leap of faith. And, you know, because it was right in this time where the pandemic was increasing, the numbers were going high in Times Square and New York City as such. But today, everybody is very happy about the result, and so are we. And I'm glad that I'm able to send it to your festival as well. Steve, I just wanted to close on a note before I go. Like I always do on social stories, you did touch a point about Black Lives Matter in the conversation earlier. Just to give you a heads up that, yes, I am working on a new project on the Black Lives Matter, because I think that's also another story that needs to be coming out in a different way. So I've teamed up with a friend of mine who's also a executive producer. His name is George Alvarez. He's done a film in the past as well. So we teamed up to think on, let's make something that. So that's coming up. And hopefully I can share that information with the team and with your viewers as well in the future.
Wonderful. That's a great ending, and appreciate you letting us know. Thank you so much for your time. Really, particularly on taking out time on a Sunday. Really appreciate it. And we'll get this up and running. And thank you so much.
Thank you very much. And appreciate all the effort on this. Thanks a lot, Steve. Cheers.
Take care, mate. Cheers.